This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, we're now doing something on the Pasuk Haggadah, this 5780. We're going to speak about the line in the Haggadah that says, Rabbi Yosef Galilam, Minayim Ta'omer Shalako Mitzrim B'Mitzrayim Aser Makos V'Al Yam Lako Chamisha Makos. Where do we see, or where do you know, that the Mitzrayim received in Mitzrayim 10 Makos, and then when they were at the sea, they received 50 Makos? Well, Rabbi Yosef Galilam goes on to say, Atbelo Kimhi, that they saw the finger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu when they saw Makas Kinim. Vayar Yisrael's Yara Gadola, when they got to Mitzrayim, when they saw Kriyas Yamsuf, when they got to the area of Kriyas Yamsuf, it says various roles of Yada Gadol. This is all the hand. The finger is one, the hand is five, so therefore it would have to be five times greater. And just like they had 10 Makos Mitzrayim, they had 50 Makos at Kriyas Yamsuf. The Malbim asks two simple questions. The word Etzba does not refer to all of the Makos, it refers only to the Mako of Kinim. So how can the Baal HaGadah claim that all 10 Makos are referenced to as a finger? That shouldn't be that way. Additionally, the hand here may not refer to five times that amount, because the word Yad is also used in reference to the plague of Devar. Devar is called the Yad of Hashem. So Yad could actually be one Makkah. So number one, if every Makkah is called an Etzba and there are 10 Makkos, this is only Makkah's Kinim, then it's likely that Etzba Lokim, all 10 Makkos, are 10 fingers. In addition, how do you know that an Etzba represents the Makkos? Maybe a Yad represents the Makkos. Maybe that's what it refers to over here. So he asks that. He answers the following. He says that Rabbi Yossi is not telling us that the word finger refers to all 10 Makkos. That's not what he's saying. It is literally one thing. It is a finger. That's all it is. He means that every plague alone can be described as an Etzba Elokim. When the Chartumim were turning to Paro and they said, look at this, every single one of these could be described as an Etzba. What that means is that each Makkah together formed in Etzba Elokim. It showed what HaKadosh Baruch Hu would do every time. Not that there were 10 different fingers. It's that that finger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the ability to do this amount of power, so to speak. And that's all they were trying to say. It was at that point in Makkas Kinim where they realized that God was in charge, that God has a finger in the first place, that he was able to do this. And they realized from there that each Makkah was the same finger being done again and again and again, punishing from what they did wrong. If so, when he brings his hand down, it's got to be five times greater. It's got to be a Makkah that's five times more than everything up until there. And this is the Yad HaGadolah. It's a plague that's five times worse than anything they had seen before, as opposed to the Yad by Dever, which showed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought five different fingers up until there, making up one hand of plagues by that point. Meaning, it's as if they had seen five different fingers, but it really was the same finger doing it over and over again. And that's how the Malbim understands it. There's the Yad that it was the fifth Makkah, and therefore as if there were five fingers, but it was truly that one Etzba being done five times over, which really only represents one Etzba for all of the Makos together, and then the Yad that they saw at Kriyas Yamsuf meant that it was going to be five times greater. Shmos Rabbah in Perikei Halacha Yudal, it says it was all Mida Keneged Mida. Paro made fun of HaKadosh Baruch Hu when Moshe Rabbeinu first came to him, telling him to let the Jews go, or else HaKadosh Baruch Hu would punish them. Paro said, Mi Hashem, Asher Eshma V'Kolo, who is HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I should listen to his voice? So in Shmos Rabbah, it says the gematria of the word Mi, who is Hashem, is the gematria of 50. Hashem said back to him, you don't know who I am right now, but in the end, you will, when these 50 Makos destroy your nation in the Yamsuf. Mi Hashem? Exactly. Mi is Hashem. That 50 is going to be HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the very, very end of the day. Rav Yitzchak Sender, who was a Rosh Shiva in Skokie Yeshiva, quotes Rav Meir Greinemann, who says, Rabbi Yosef Galilei was troubled why Bnei Yisrael didn't have the level of Amunah, Vayaminu Ba'Hashem of Moshe Abdo, when they first left Mitzrayim. Why did it take them until Kriyas Yamsuf to get to that level? That was Rabbi Yosef Galilei's really question. I don't understand. Throughout all the Makos and them leaving Egypt, they still didn't have Amunah until they got to the Yamsuf, and then by Yaminu Ba'Hashem and Moshe Abdo? And the answer is because in Mitzrayim they were only privy to one finger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They had not yet seen what HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do. There were other gods at the time who had the ability to do a finger worth of power. And yeah, there were Makos, but they saw that as just in a continuation of what they had seen in other lands and by other gods. Only when they saw the hand did they get to 50. And the 50 refers to the 50th level of understanding, that level of Havana, where they all understood that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was truly in charge, wisdom and Emunah on the highest level. Why did it get worse for the Egyptians once the Jews left Mitzrayim? How could it be worse? They got the 10 Makos, and that was only the Etzba. They left Mitzrayim, they let the Jews go, and then they got the hand? Should they really have been punished five times worse at that point than what they had before in Mitzrayim? Was there that big of a difference? The simple answer to the question is yes, because they came after them. They promised they were going to let them go. They said let them go. And then they went after them. So yes, they deserve five times more. But Elena Lishabeach says on page 193 in Sefer Vayikra that while they were in Mitzrayim, they got off easy. The reason why is because they had a schus. The schus was that of being a nachsanya, of having achnas sorchim. They let the Jews into the land. They gave the Jews what they needed, to give them food and shelter. And although they eventually took it against them and made them into slaves, nonetheless, that schus that they had of achnas sorchim, it was still there. Once they left, that schus was gone. Therefore, they were punished what they really deserved, and they got all 50. That's the schus of what you get for letting people into your house and allowing people there. Maybe not now. This might not be the time for it, right? Because of the virus, etc. But bringing somebody in is that big of a schus. The Sefer Piyaget says at the end of these 50 makos, the Egyptians could no longer live. That's why the Sefer Tevos of Laku Chamishim Makos is the letters of Maves, which stand for death. That's what it stood for over here. Rav Matzio Salomon asks, what's the point of telling us the number of additional plagues here if we don't know what they are? Meaning you're telling us there are 50 plagues that happened at Kriyas Yamsuf, but we don't know any of them. We don't even know if there was Dam Sfaradi Akinim, although we assume that it was them. What kind of Makos happened over here? So he says, the whole purpose, he says, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu punished the Egyptians was to teach the Jews Yiras Shamayim. By witnessing the Egyptians' downfall, by witnessing the Egyptians go down that quickly, they learned the idea that the Jews learned that the actions that we do in this world are taken seriously and they'll be punished severely as well. That there is retribution for the bad things that people do, causing them to have more fear and awe of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The more makos they received, the more the impression was internalized. And therefore, when they got to the 50 makos at Kriyas Yamsuf, it was really for Bnei Yisrael to improve themselves upon the level. But they could get something amazing. The great hand that they saw caused them fear. And that's why the pasuk really refers to Bnei Yisrael. Vayar Yisrael's Yadah Gadolah. It doesn't matter what the Mitzrayim saw. It matters what Bnei Yisrael saw at that point. They saw the Yadah Gadolah and they improved from it. They became great because of it. Rav Chaim Kanievsky in Derech Sicha number 1 says that the reason why these makos are not mentioned directly in the Torah and they weren't said directly, even though they were five times greater than what happened in Mitzrayim itself, is because the Jews did not see them happen since they were all in the sea. They couldn't... That's a little bit of a misnomer. They couldn't watch them happen because they were in the middle of the Yamsuf at the time. There was no way for them to know what was actually happening. Meaning they saw everything that happened in Mitzrayim. Those makos that happened, all 10 of them, but they didn't see this. The Egyptians themselves didn't even live to tell them what happened over there. Therefore, the Torah doesn't tell us what they are because no one saw it. And just like we see by the Kivshan Eish, as the Ramban says famously, by the Kivshan Eish, whenever Avraham Avinu was put into the kiln of fire, that's not mentioned in the Torah because there was no one there to testify about it. Only Avraham Avinu and the people there that we don't trust. Therefore, these types of things are not put in the Torah itself. So to these miracles, we never talked about, we don't mention them. The Netziv says they did know what these makos were. Each maka is obvious, and we 100% know. There were different aspects of death given to their enemies. Meaning the way the Medrash says that some of them were like straw, and some of them like wood, and some of them like bricks, and that's how they drowned in the sea. Those were the 50 makos. The 50 different ways of them dying. It wasn't just straw, wood, and bricks. There were many, many, many other ways of them dying, and each one was a different level. 50 levels of death altogether. That's how the Nesiv understands it. They watched the repressors receive a death eerily similar to what they made them do in Mitzrayim. They remembered what the Egyptians did to them, and they watched Mida Keneged Mida. I know that goes against how could they see it when they were in the sea. But the concept, right, is that they watched them have the same type of death of what happened to them when they were slaves to them in Mitzrayim. That was true. Mida Keneged Mida, which brought about a certain level of year, which allowed them to understand how awesome HaKadosh Baruch Hu was. And Netziv says they didn't, that was the Netziv itself. The Rambam says that these 50 plagues were of the same basic types as the Makos were in Mitzrayim. This is the Rambam in Pirkei Avos. But they had numerous subdivisions, and they were just different enough that they could be considered 50 different Makos given to them in the sea. I've always wondered, some of the lines that they said, some of the Midrashim that we say about the Makos themselves, how is it Shaykh that all of them happened? There are some unbelievable Midrashim out there about the Makos, but if you say that they happen in the sea, somehow they happen in Kriyas Yamsuf, a lot of them can be explained away, that they might not have happened in Mitzrayim, but at the sea itself, there were five times. And I realize there's also Rabbi Yossi Aglili, as long as Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, whether there were four or five extra ones, but this is one of them. Zevach Pesach, the Abarbanel says, each Makkah repeated itself in very, very harsh ways. For example, Makkah's dam came back in the Yamsuf because many Egyptians died and their blood spilled throughout the area, so it looked like blood. So it looked like there was blood throughout the entire area. Many Egyptians swallowed that water of blood and they caused themselves to choke. There were also frogs and other creatures with them in the water, as well as lice and water lice and other tiny creatures that bit into their skin and possibly blinded them. As for wild animals, there could have been wild animals of the sea, like sharks or octopus or who knows what else was down there. Their horses died. So that's Dever. They got boils all over their bodies. That's Shchin. Storms may have happened for them while they were in the sea itself, or stormy-like conditions that would have been there for Barad. Lightning, thunder, hail, who knows? There were already locusts in the sea, the remnants of the Arbed that was already thrown into the sea by the time that Arba ended. And it was certainly very dark in there, especially with the clouds surrounding them, so they didn't know where they were. And of course, many of them died. Perhaps that's the idea behind it. Says the Abarbanel in Zevach Pesach, that's the idea of the Makos coming back for them five times worse in the Yam, that it was even more horrible than it was in Mitzrayim itself. Rav Shur says in Halekach Valibo that every time we go over the story of Mitzrayim, of what happened when we left, we add more Makos to the Egyptians and increase their own shim to the world. We just keep trying to get more and more and more. That's what it means by Emor Me'ata toward the end of the paragraph. Now that we've gone through this story yet another time, well, we can add additional fire to the Makos and we can increase them as Rabbi Yosef Galili did. That's our power on the night of Pesach. We're able to do something. The same way that the Tamim Nahagim brings down that we hit by Haman. It's the point of hitting by Haman. Because every time you punch the ground or you do something on by Haman, it gives him a little bit of pain, right? You're giving him a little bit of pain every time you patch, you do something that automatically happens. So too over here, every time you add on to a makkah, it's making the makkah even worse for the Mitzrayim. Rabbi Yeshua Levin Landau in the Medrash Shmuel Haggadah, the Yeshiva Medrash Shmuel came out with the Haggadah a few years ago, says there's a stira to this famous brisa brought in the Mechilta with Pirkei Avos Parakei Mishnah Hei. So we have a Mechilta as well as Parakei Mishnah Hei and Pirkei Avos. In Pirkei Avos, it says straight out, there were 10 plagues in Egypt and 10 at the Yam. Not 50, not 200, not 250. It says straight out, 10 and 10. This brisa brought in the Mechilta and Shmos says that there were either 50 or 200 or 250. So how do we reconcile that Mechilta together with this Mishnah in Pirkei Avos? How could it possibly be? So it's obvious that the numbers are given based on subcategories. No one's really arguing here. There are 10, then there's 50, there's 200 and 250. They're all arguing about how to darshan them, but we're really arguing about subdivisions, the categories, how to be able to knock them down. Really, there were 10 makos at Kriyas Yam Suf. But there were other aspects that HaKadosh Baruch Hu added to the plagues to make them more. Either 5 times more, 20 times more, or 25 times more, depending on what you have. And that machlokas seems to be based on what was the purpose of the makos in the first place. If you say it's only 5 times more, it is one aspect. Maybe for Klal Yisrael, if it's 20 times more, 25 times more, then maybe it's an aspect of either they're going up against the Shem of Havaya, or the Shem of Elohim, where Havaya is 4 times and Elohim is 5 times more. So you have Rabbi Kim, Rabbi Elazar arguing about whether it's 4 or 5 times more. But what were the original 10 aspects? Well, this is actually brought down in the Mechilta. The Mechilta brings down the 10 main categories, and then it goes through, and obviously there are 50, there are 200, there are 250 that add to this, but these are the original 10. Although it was daytime when Bnei Yisrael crossed, right, nonetheless, the clouds kept the Egyptians in the dark, which sounds quite like Choshech, but that's not the point here. We're not trying to quote the Makos all over again. Number two, the clouds turned the hard ground into mud. Number three, the pillar of fire sent waves of heat into the Egyptians, causing their horses' hooves to fall off. Number four, the heat burned off the chariot's wheels so that they flew into the sea. Number five, the Egyptians tumbled off their chariots and fell to the ground, not being able to get up. Number six, the Egyptians that didn't tumble off couldn't escape. The water came after them in all directions. Number seven, they were tossed into the sea and they sank. The depths pushed them back to the top waters. Number eight, some of them were covered by mud at the bottom of the sea. Number nine, some sank like lead and died quickly. The others sank like stones and straw, that measures that we mentioned earlier, dying an agonizing death. Number 10, all of their bodies were eventually ejected by the Yam Suf onto the banks, so that Bnei Yisrael could see them and realize that they were dead. Those are the 10 that are brought by the Mechilta. Now, the Me'am Lois famously has 50 miracles of Kriyas Yam Suf, and he uses others from all over the place. And that very well may be what Rabbi Yosef Galili is talking about. But according to the Mechilta, and the way the Mechilta is learning, it's these 10 categories that are just expanded into 5 each. And therefore, everybody agrees about the 10. Everybody agrees with Pirkei Avos that it was 10 makos that happened at Yam Suf. Just what happened along with those 10, that's the argument, and that's the 50, the 200, and 250. Where Shlomo Fisher explains in a Sefer Beis Yishai, there's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, it's in Perchas Pasuk Yud Beis, it says, Ha'elef lecha Shlomo, Masayin Linoch Nes Periyo, there is 1,000 for you, Shlomo, and another 200 for those who guard over your fruit. So another is 1,000 silver pieces to you, and then 200 more, a little bit less. Now that's interesting altogether. We have 1,000 at first. Those who learn, the Medrash explains in this, those who learn Torah with pain will receive 1,000 as their reward, while those who do so without pain, Linotram is period, there's fruit involved, etc., we receive 200, five times less. So perhaps that's why we have a person named Barhehe or Bar Ben Bagbag throughout the Gemara. Barhehe and Bar Ben Bagbag are supposed to be two people who were Gerim, who came to Klai Yisrael. Tosfos explains in Chagiga that Barhehe was known because what he did in order to come to Klai Yisrael. Well, now maybe it makes sense. Lepum Sara Agra is a line from Barhehe. The more pain you put into it, the more schar you get. According to the amount you pain into it, a pain you put into it, you receive a reward. In fact, the word tsar is 360 in Gematria, which is five times the amount of chesed, 72. By going through the pain and the enslavement, Bnei Yisrael were able to be zocher to this reward, and thus Barhehe or Ben Bagbag, Ben Beis Gimel, is also five, because it's five times the amount that you get going through it with pain versus going through it without, meaning a ger in some ways, some aspects, can be five times greater than anybody else. They're seeing their oppressors suffer five times as much in the Yamsuf, was right before their very eyes. They saw that, and that was the reward for going through what they did in Mitzrayim, and maybe that's what Rabbi Yosef Galili is hinting to, this idea. One of the many rewards given to the Egyptians is that they were buried properly after dying in the Yamsuf. The question is why? Why did they merit the reward of being buried? What was that schus? The Avnei Nezer says that Yefes was rewarded for covering up his father Noach together with shame, right, when he was in his drunkenness, etc., and his schus was being buried properly. We know shame got the schus of tzitzis, etc., right? We know that Yefes got the schus of having the concept of burial given to them, so that all of Yefes, all of his kids, would have the concept of burial properly. Chazal say the reason he received this schar, this reward, is because he saw the physical disgrace his father was going through and sought to cover him up properly. Therefore, mida keneged mida, he merited being covered up properly when he is disgraced, meaning when the body is disgraced after death. That is an honor to the physical body, mida keneged mida, to what he did to his father Noach. That's the idea. He says, and this is the idea that Avnei Nezer says, he can also be applied to the Egyptians themselves. They said, Hashem HaTzadik, the Aniv Amir Shaim, together with Paro. They believed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was power, but unfortunately was only lip service out of fear. They had a year of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but not even a good year. They had a year without any Ava, without the true year of Elohim. They didn't mean it. They planned on worship. They didn't plan on worshiping HaKadosh Baruch Hu whatsoever. Therefore, the reward was a lip service, an external one. They would be properly buried. On the outside, their bodies would be taken care of, while their neshamas were not. The neshamas would still receive some type of a punishment. Throughout the days of Yom Tov, that message should be about internalizing the lip service that we're saying, the Haggadah of speaking out, Pesach, the mouth speaking, that we normally would have, and making it more heartfelt. That's the concept of what we're trying to get through on Pesach. The Rambam does not have this text in the Haggadah. You know, the Rambam himself did not put in Dayenu or Rabbi Yosef Galili, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Eliezer, etc. He skips it completely. The reason why, Rav Avram, the son of the Rambam, says his father omitted it because it wasn't a widespread custom, and therefore it wasn't crucial. But he personally did say it, says Rav Avram, the son of the Rambam. The Rambam did say Dayenu, and he did say Rabbi Eliezer, because that was his minhag, since it didn't accomplish, but he didn't want to put it in, right? But nonetheless, it did accomplish, call him Marbil, Asap, Rabbi Tzias, Mitzrayim, Harizim, Eshubach. So he's Marbil, Asap, Rabbi Tzias, Mitzrayim. So he added on Dayenu, he added on Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yosef Galili, but he didn't put it in his Haggadah. That's what Rav Avram, the son of the Rambam, says about his father, the Rambam. Resender quotes Rabbi Yosha Ber Soloveitchik. Rabbi Yosha Ber Soloveitchik, in a true brisker way, ignores what Rabbi Avram, the son of the Rambam, says about his own father and says, no, it's pshat why the Rambam left it out. This night is about miracles that happened on Pesach night. Vayhi b'chatzi alayla is supposed to be about Pesach night. Based on the Rambam in Hilchos Chametz Matzah, Perek Zayin Halacha Aleph, check it out there, the wording is very direct. And not about miracles that happened 7 days later at Kriyas Yamsuf. The Haggadah is not supposed to be about Kriyas Yamsuf. It's not supposed to be. It's supposed to be about us leaving Mitzrayim, but what happened that very night, the miracles there, but it's not about the other nights. Therefore, the Rambam ignores the three-way machlokas, which are dealing with the miracles that happen at Kriyas Yamsuf. He ignores Dayenu, which the flux thereof is all about the miracles that happened to them throughout the Midbar, and not just what happened on this night itself. And he only deals with aspects that are dealing with Yetzias Mitzrayim itself, and that's that. As opposed to our daily chiyuv of Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, we can mention leaving Egypt or crossing the Yamsuf, or we can do that twice a day to strengthen our Amunah and allow us to be Mekabel Omachus Shemayim better. That's for sure okay. But that emphasizes only our commitment to Torah Mitzvos. Our Mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is to talk about what happened on that night, to know what happened on that night, and that's only about that thing itself. There's also a Torah Menachem, the Lubavitcher Rebbe on the Haggadah, why we do say it as well. why he doesn't go with the Rambam. The Nitzutz HaShemshon has a tremendous piece about this part of the Haggadah and explains many wondrous secrets there. The Nitzutz HaShemshon has a whole piece that he says that if you say this on Seder night, you'll be zochet a tremendous bracha and atzlacha. It's a great piece. Included within is a mimer from the Zohar that the name known as Shin Pei Vav was used to hit the Mitzrayim, and that gave them 10 makos in Mitzrayim and 50 at the Yam. That was Rabbi Yosef Galili's line. Rabbi Yosef Galili said he used the name of Shin Pei Vav. That name was also used by David HaMelech and as sheiches to him. Happens to be the Rabbi Yossi HaGlili is the Gilgal of David HaMelech and Nitzutz of David HaMelech, and therefore he was supposed to say this drasha because it was connected to him, because David HaMelech was used by him himself. And Shin Pei Vav is the gematria of Rabbi Yossi HaGlili. 386 is Rabbi Yossi HaGlili. No added letters there, it's Rabbi, then Yud Vav Samach Yud, Hey Gimel Lamed Yud Lamed Yud. That's the same as Shin Pei Vav. That's the connection, the idea that went both of them, I guess, to connect them together. Sefer Akika Chad says Rabbi Yosef Galili was from the Galil, which was very clear air. That's an air where people would go to in order to think correctly. That's why Tzfas is so well known, Miron, etc. It helped him think clearly, making him an Aryeh in learning. Aryeh is the Rosh Yeshivas Rabbi Yossi HaGlili Omer. Rabbi Yossi HaGlili Omer is Resh Yud He Aleph. So therefore, it's Aryeh altogether. HaGlili is the gematria of 88 because he knocked down the Pach the Sutton uses. That Pach is supposed to be a gematria that people go against. It says it's an amount of Tumah that traps and destroys people and takes them down. As we say, HaPach Nishbor VaNachnim La, we're able to escape after the Pach is Nishbor. Rabbi Yossi HaGlili was able to open something up for us that we weren't able to get to before. He was able to be megalitua, something that we did not have before, which again is a connection to his name, HaGlili. If anybody's done Bava Kama in the first parak, they know that the word gole in some way can mean to open up in some way, shape, or form to allow us to understand what it means to have a tamina muad. If that's true, then hopefully this will be the last year that we're saying this in Gullus and we understand what it means, right, when we have such a thing of the 10 miracles that they received in Mitzrayim itself and 50 at the Yamsuf that allow us to understand Mi Hashem Asher Eshma Bakolo, the 50 of Mi Hashem that I should listen to his voice. Shkach, everyone, have a great Pesach.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.